So, picture this. You are sitting at a family dinner.
Oh boy, we've all been there.
Right. It's, a gathering you've had 100 times before. You're passing plates, pouring water, just listening to someone tell a totally mundane story about their commute or whatever.
It's like the normal evening.
Exactly. And then, right in the middle of this completely ordinary conversation, someone you love, someone you know to be highly intelligent, compassionate, deeply thoughtful, just casually drops a massive, demonstrably false historical claim.
Yeah.
And they say it with this like calm, relaxed confidence. Like they're just correcting a common misconception about the weather.
It's jarring.
It really is. The whole room just goes entirely silent. People look down at their plates. Nobody breathes a word. And in that heavy silence, you just feel this fundamental assumption about the world shatter.
Because you realize that their sharp mind and their good heart, well, it didn't keep them safe.
Yes. That specific, deeply unsettling scenario is the foundation for our deep dive today into Jose Enrique Perez's book, When Smart People Believe False Things: Identity, History, and the Age of Narrative Artisans.
It's such a crucial book.
It really is. Our mission today is to deconstruct exactly how brilliant minds fall into these cognitive traps, expose the unseen digital machinery that's pulling them in, and most importantly, equip you with some tools to maybe save your relationships when factual reality just sort of loses its grip.
I love that. And, to even begin this conversation, we really had to establish the book's core paradigm shift,
Right.
which is that believing false things is not a symptom of low intelligence.
That's the part that trips people up.
It is. It is not an indicator of stupidity or gullibility or, a broken mind. It is fundamentally just a sign of being a vulnerable human being who's trying to navigate an information environment that has been meticulously engineered to overwhelm human cognition.
Wow,
Yeah.
meticulously engineered.
Yeah. And as long as society keeps equating false beliefs with low IQ, we
Yeah.
just remain completely blind to how the manipulation actually works.
Okay, let's unpack this because if we want to understand the trap, we really have to figure out why a formidable intellect isn't a sufficient shield. I mean, we naturally assume that someone with a high IQ and great critical thinking skills will just, evaluate evidence logically and arrive at the truth.
Right, we cling to this idea that humans are purely rational creatures, that we just gather data to form a conclusion. But decades of psychology and neuroscience reveal the exact opposite.
Which is.
Emotion always precedes reasoning. We feel first, and we think second. So the entry point for a false belief is almost always a completely valid, deeply felt emotion.
Like what kind of emotion?
Well, a person might be experiencing profound alienation, or maybe severe moral outrage, or just this crushing sense that the foundational institutions of their society have totally abandoned them.
Which honestly is a remarkably common and entirely rational way to feel in today's world. Like if someone is struggling to pay rent while watching corporate profits absolutely soar, that sense of systemic betrayal is entirely grounded in reality.
Exactly. The underlying emotional void is real. The problem is that the mind cannot tolerate the chaos of a void. It just can't.
It needs order.
It does. So it unconsciously begins hunting for a narrative that organizes and validates that specific pain. And when it finds a story that explains their frustration, a story that points a finger at a specific villain and provides clarity, the brain just latches onto it.
It's like a survival mechanism.
It is. In the internal economy of human belief, a narrative that feels emotionally true is worth infinitely more than a narrative that is objectively factually true.
Okay, but I have to push back on the intelligence aspect for a second.
Go for it.
Because, wait, shouldn't a smart person be able to logic their way out of this? Like, if you've spent your life honing your critical thinking skills, maybe you have a graduate degree, or you manage complex projects for a living, you should inherently be able to spot the gaping logical holes in a manufactured narrative.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah.
But intelligence actually makes the problem harder to solve.
Wait, really? How?
Psychologists refer to this dynamic as motivated reasoning. A highly intelligent person does not automatically use their cognitive horsepower to seek objective truth.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah. When their emotional security is tied to a specific narrative, they deploy their logic, their rhetorical skills, all their pattern recognition to build an impenetrable fortress around that belief.
Wow.
They know how to cherry pick obscure data sets. They anticipate and dismantle counter arguments. Yeah. They can rationalize away massive inconsistencies. The tools of rigorous academic thought are basically repurposed into weapons against the truth.
You know, reading the source material, I kept thinking about this imagery of an hourglass.
Ooh, I like that. Let's hear it.
So if you think of the human mind like an hourglass, at the very top, you have this wide open space filled with organic, natural human emotion and pure curiosity, like the organic trees and nature you'd see in the top glass.
Beautiful, yeah.
But as those organic emotions get sucked down and funnel through the narrow neck of digital media, the algorithms, the platforms, they undergo this transformation.
They get compressed.
Exactly. Yeah. They become rigid, manufactured, and industrialized. And by the time they settle at the bottom of the glass, they've transformed into this cold, concrete cityscape of absolute conviction.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. That concrete cityscape is what motivated reasoning builds. And the emotional rewards kept inside those concrete walls are immense.
Like, what are they getting out of it?
Well, first, the individual gains absolute certainty in a world that otherwise feels terrifyingly ambiguous.
Right.
Second, they acquire a unique, elevated identity. It's that intoxicating feeling of being awake while the rest of society is just asleep.
Yeah, the special knowledge.
Exactly. But above all, they gain crucial social belonging. By adopting the belief, they are welcomed into a community of like-minded protectors.
So if the brain is already primed by this emotional void, this need for connection and certainty, what exactly happens the moment they open their phone to look for answers? Because we have the psychological vulnerability, but we really need to look at the mechanical trap here.
Right, the digital side of it.
Yeah, because the radicalization process clearly isn't just a sudden flip of a switch.
No, not at all. It is a gradual, almost imperceptible walk. And it universally begins with a perfectly legitimate, innocent question.
Someone just wondering about something they saw.
Exactly. A curious person notices a discrepancy between, say, the official institutional account of an event and what they're observing in their daily life. So they do what modern society has trained all of us to do. They turn to a search bar.
But they aren't walking into a library curated by experts.
Nope. They are stepping onto a digital platform optimized exclusively for user engagement.
So they type their question into the search bar. The results populate and... I mean, let's be real. They're probably going to bypass the dry encyclopedic articles and click on a video with a slightly provocative title, right?
Always. Something hinting at a hidden truth. And that single click initiates this silent algorithmic transaction.
The algorithm wakes up.
Right. And remember, the algorithm lacks any concept of truth, ethics, or accuracy. It operates on a single metric physiological engagement.
It just wants your attention.
It measures how long your eyes stayed on the screen,
yeah.
Whether your heart rate elevated enough to make you leave a comment. And because human psychology is wired to react most strongly to outrage and fear,
it feeds you more of that.
Exactly. The algorithm learns that those emotions keep you on the platform longer. So the next time the user logs in, the feed has subtly shifted. It serves content that is maybe 5% more extreme.
So the user feels like they're independently pulling a thread of truth, exploring on their own.
But the entire menu of choices has been curated to pull them down a specific engagement funnel.
But the content alone doesn't radicalize people, right? It's the community.
Yes. The content is just the bait.
Yeah.
The true hook is the people. The moment they leave a comment on that video or join a linked forum, they are suddenly welcomed as a brave, independent thinker.
They get bombarded with positive reinforcement.
What's fascinating here is how the cost of changing one's mind transforms.
How so?
Well, early on, realizing a fact was incorrect is just a simple intellectual update. You say, oh, I was wrong about that, and you move on. But once your core identity is woven into this new digital community.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Once these people are your primary source of validation and friendship, admitting the core premise is flawed means losing your entire new social circle.
The cost of returning to reality is utter isolation.
Exactly. The brain will utilize every ounce of its motivated reasoning to avoid paying that social cost.
That is just a tragic irony. The whole journey started because the person wanted to question everything. They were curious. But it ends with them fiercely refusing to question the one belief that has become their entire identity. The curiosity is just systematically eradicated and replaced by certainty.
It is. Which leads us to a really important question. Since the algorithm is just a blind machine seeking engagement, who is actually creating the content that feeds it?
Right. the human architects exploiting the system.
The book identifies these creators as narrative artisans. This is basically an unspoken alliance. The platforms optimize for engagement, for ad revenue, and narrative artisans exploit this by creating emotionally resonant, functionally beautiful, but totally false content.
They are feeding the beast.
They are.
So who are these artisans? Paint a picture of the cast of characters here.
It's a really broad spectrum. On one end, you have state-aligned propaganda teams operating with massive budgets. Their goal is intentionally injecting polarizing narratives into foreign countries to destabilize them.
Okay, state actors.
No.
Who else?
Then you have ideological or extremist networks. They've learned to mask their hatred. So instead of just screaming slurs, they produce these high-definition pseudo-historical documentaries that slowly normalize bigotry over a two-hour runtime.
Wow, so it looks incredibly professional.
Very slick. Then you also have bad faith intellectuals. These are people with advanced degrees who use dense academic jargon to launder wild distortions so they appear as serious scholarship.
And then they're just the grifters.
Yes, yeah. The pure attention merchants. They just want clicks. They probably don't even believe the conspiracy theories they broadcast. They just know that slapping a sinister red circle and a sensationalized question mark on a thumbnail generates a million views.
Which means ad revenue.
Exactly.
But wait, let me play devil's advocate for a second. Isn't encouraging people to, you know, just ask questions a core part of a free society? How is that manipulation?
It's a great point. And the artisans actually weaponize that exact cultural reverence for free inquiry. They rely heavily on what the book calls directional dares.
Directional dares.
Mm. Yeah. So when an artisan asks, what are they hiding from you?
Mm.
They're not posing an open inquiry. These are directional dares.
Ah, so the question is a trap.
Exactly. It presupposes a cover-up. It flatters the listener's intelligence by implying they belong to a select group smart enough to see through the illusion, all while leading them down a highly predetermined path.
It's the illusion of independent thought.
Precisely.
To show just how destructive this artisan algorithm alliance is, we really need to look at its ultimate targets, which are the documented past and the observable present.
Let's start with the past. History is the perfect target for artisans.
Because it relies on trust.
Exactly. None of us can travel back in time. History relies entirely on our trust in institutions, archives, and witnesses. Break the trust, and you break the history.
And the book uses the Holocaust as the ultimate test case for this.
It does, because the Holocaust is the most exhaustively documented event in human history.
We literally have survivor testimonies, massive amounts of physical evidence, demographic data. I mean, we have the meticulous bureaucratic records kept by the Nazis themselves.
Yes. The sheer volume of evidence is staggering.
To successfully deny it occurred, a person has to genuinely believe in a synchronized 80-year global conspiracy maintained without a single leak across rival nations.
It is a statistical and logical impossibility.
It's absurd.
And yet, it is systematically denied every day online. Because if an artisan can convince a disaffected teenager that the entire global establishment lied about an event of that magnitude.
Oh, I see. Then nothing is true.
Right. They have effectively proven that no institution can ever be trusted about anything ever again.
Yeah.
It's a master key to total distrust.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The artisans aren't just erasing history anymore. They're applying these exact same techniques to deny the immediate present.
The war for what you see.
Exactly. Real-time manipulation. We see this constantly now. Ordinary citizens film real events on their cell phones. Maybe it's an immigration enforcement action or a messy political protest.
Raw, chaotic footage.
Yeah. And within hours, these artisans download that footage. They strip away all the context. They might add new voiceovers, slap some inflammatory text on the screen, and re-upload it to fit a completely different narrative.
And we have to be extremely clear here. To maintain impartiality, we need to note that this mechanism is used across the entire political spectrum.
Absolutely. Left wing, right wing, it doesn't matter. The algorithm doesn't care about your politics.
No, it just wants the outrage. The algorithm pushes the most emotionally charged, recontextualized clip to the top of everyone's feed.
Which means the manipulated lie travels millions of times faster than the raw, unedited, boring truth.
And the result of that is the total collapse of shared reality.
Mm.
Citizens in the same city can't even agree on what physically happened on their own streets yesterday.
It's terrifying. So, knowing the overwhelming power of this entire digital machinery, what can you, the listener, possibly do when someone you love is trapped inside it?
It's the hardest question.
Because our deepest instinct when someone drops a crazy conspiracy theory at dinner is to fight facts with facts. We want to pull out our phones and prove them wrong right there.
And we have to completely unlearn that instinct.
Why? Why doesn't the truth work?
Because of the backfire effect. Remember, the belief is now tied to their identity. So when you flood them with evidence, fact checks, and ultimatums, the amygdala, the brain's threat detection center, can't distinguish between a physical attack and an attack on their ego.
So their brain processes contrary evidence as a literal physical threat.
Exactly. The cognitive walls go even higher.
It's like bringing a calculator to a poetry slam.
Oh, love that.
Yeah, you know, you're armed with this tool of pure objective logic, but you are standing in an arena governed entirely by raw emotion and identity. You can crunch the numbers all you want, but you are speaking a language the room is functionally deaf to.
That's spot on. You cannot solve an emotional identity crisis with a spreadsheet.
So what actually works? How do we play the long game here?
The book distills some very practical advice. First, and most importantly, stay in the relationship.
Don't cut them off.
Do not cut them off. The extremist community is constantly telling them, outsiders hate you, they're corrupt. Your continued loving presence is the absolute best counter-narrative to that lie.
That makes sense. What's next?
Ask. Don't argue. Use genuine curiosity to help them retrace their steps. Ask things like, what first made you question the mainstream account? Or what specific evidence would change your mind?
Make them map their own logic.
Exactly. Third, address the emotional need. This is huge.
Because it started with an emotional void.
Right. If they are deeply lonely, help them find real-world connection. If they feel powerless at work, help them find an outlet where they have real agency. Offer them a tangible reality that is more fulfilling than the digital void.
And finally, you have to share your own vulnerability, right?
Yes. Talk about a time you were completely wrong about something big. You have to model the humility that their online communities strictly forbid. Show them you can change your mind without crushing shame.
So turning the lens directly back to the listener, for our own mental self-defense, we have to rehabilitate the concept of doubt in ourselves.
Yes. Methodical doubt is the guardian of objective truth. And the book lays out a great actionable takeaway for this, the 15-second rule.
Oh, I try to use this now.
It's so hard, but so necessary. Before you share, retweet, or amplify anything, force yourself to pause for 15 seconds. Trace the origin of the claim and check your own emotional temperature.
Ask yourself, am I sharing this because it's true or because it makes me feel morally superior to people I don't like?
Exactly. Inserting those 15 seconds starves the algorithmic cycle of the reactive outrage it needs. And alongside that, you have to seek out the strongest version of an opposing argument, not the weakest.
You have to steel man the opposition. Stop dunking on the craziest person from the other side and actually engage with their smartest thinkers.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, choosing rigorous curiosity over the comfort of absolute certainty isn't just a clever tactic for winning a dinner table argument. It is the fundamental requirement for rebuilding a fractured shared reality. Mm-hmm. And we have to do it one relationship at a time.
We have covered so much ground today, but before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you go about your day.
Yeah, leave them with a good one.
If the internet were to simply disappear tomorrow morning, taking all your feeds, your forums, and your algorithmic validations with it, if every deeply held certainty you formed online just completely vanished, what underlying emotional need would you wake up trying to satisfy? And more importantly, who in the real physical world would you turn to in order to fill it?